Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Everyone, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Ananta Ripa Ajumera. You'll recognize her from our last episode, and if you haven't checked that episode out yet, go check it out now. We talked about becoming the hero of your journey, basically taking negative situations that happen in our lives, traumas or other things that might happen, and seeing it in a more positive light. You know, how can we grow from this, kind of along the lines of the post-traumatic growth mindset that sometimes we throw that phrase around. So for anyone who maybe hasn't checked out that episode yet, Ananta is a spiritual teacher, Ayurveda practitioner, and author of the Ayurveda Way and the Way of the Goddess. And she's also the co-founder of The Ancient Way. And today we're going to be discussing the benefits of Ayurveda and how these ancient practices can help to transform your life. So before we get into all that, Ananta, I want to welcome you back to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to be back on the show.
And I figured out, I think, the pronunciation, which if you were listening to the last episode, I was trying to pronounce Ayurveda, and I was screwing it up. I was butchering it so bad that I actually had a question prepped geared around that in the last episode. And I was like, I'm just going to skip it because I had a mental block and I couldn't say it. And so I think I figured it out. I think I've got it so far. So, which is good because that's what this episode is going to be about. So, to kind of kick off the episode, can you start by explaining what Ayurveda is and kind of principles around it? And, it's a term I know prior to meeting you, I was unfamiliar with the term. And I'm sure there's some listeners who may not be familiar with it either. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is and kind of what we're looking into here?
Yeah, sure. I'm very happy that I get to be the one to introduce you to Ayurveda. Ayurveda is the world's oldest system of health and healing. It's a holistic system that comes from ancient India, and it's the sister science of yoga, which teaches you all about how to live a healthy lifestyle that will give you back the power to reclaim your own natural healing abilities. Ayurveda looks at four different dimensions of the human being. It looks at the physical dimension, it looks at your mind, it looks at your spirit, and it looks at the dimension of your five senses in terms of how you interact with the world, what you take in through your senses, and also what you put out through your senses. One of the key principles of Ayurveda is the presence of what are known as five great elements. These are from the grossest to the subtlest. We have earth, water, fire, air, and space. And these are kind of like what we understand in science as being the solid state of matter, the liquid state of matter. Physicists now are acknowledging a thermal state of matter, the gaseous state of matter, and then a potential state of matter represented by the air element. What Ayurveda teaches us is that we are deeply connected with nature through the presence of these five great elements. And we are actually the microcosm of nature, which is the macrocosm. So we are deeply connected with nature. And anything that we need to learn about ourselves and anything that we need to understand in order to come back to a state of balance, which is the key to health, is really about learning from nature. And when we look to nature, nature has the answers for us. And nature actually is the one who brings about the deepest healing.
I like where this is going. So, you know, in a lot of times we have some issue with us, whether it's with our physical health or our mental health, or something is going on with us. Mm-hmm. And we'll go to a doctor, and the doctor prescribes some medication, and the medication helps with certain symptoms that you might be having. And that's great, because those symptoms were the thing that brought you into the doctor in the first place. But a lot of times those medications create new symptoms, and you yeah. have other problems that come from that. And then you go back to the doctor, hey, this was great, except for now I'm having this other symptom. And okay, well, here's something else to take. And before you know it, you're on 10 different medications, all because there was one thing that was wrong, that maybe there was an answer in nature. You know, something that we could have done differently. You know, maybe it was changing something in our diet, or, you know, exercise, or something in, you know, to change something around us that could have alleviated some of that. And maybe we wouldn't need that medication in the first place. And so, so that's kind of how I'm kind of envisioning what you just described. Is that kind of, am I in the, at least in the ballpark?
Yeah, totally, that? Totally. There's an ancient Ayurvedic aphorism that says, when your diet is correct, medicine is not necessary. When your diet is not correct, medicine will not be of any help.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
So food is medicine is a big principle of Ayurveda, and there's a lot to be found within that itself. And even the herbal supplements and recommendations that you should ideally get from a qualified practitioner will be all natural. They will not give you side effects, as long as they're well created and balanced to suit your unique constitution. Ayurveda is definitely not a one-size-fits-all type of science. It's highly customized. It looks at each individual as an individual, seeks to understand each individual, and then gives something that is going to be really specific to what ailments you have. On the other hand, though, there is a whole host of guidance for how to harmonize your daily routine and your seasonal routine so that you're really in alignment with the movement of the sun, or sorry, the movement of the earth around the sun. So okay. We really look to the sun as a symbol of health and a symbol of the fire within us that will lead us to a state of balance. So health is really defined as balance, a balanced state of mind, a balanced body, and balance in terms of how we're utilizing our five senses. A lot of the holistic traditions actually don't really take into account how we're engaging with our five senses. And yet this can be a big source for where we find the root cause of problems coming in for people, is the overuse, underuse, or misuse of, say, the eyes and what you're taking in, or what you're hearing or smelling or tasting or touching.
So someone who's staring at a computer screen all day, for example, is probably not optimal with yeah. regards to that, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. It's out of balance, right? So they need right. to do some extra nourishment to care for the eyes. We have some interesting recommendations for that. Some might feel a little intimidating, but that's why we don't start with those. We start with okay. more gentle recommendations.
Well, I think that that's a good approach with just about anything, is if you are just going to dive into the deep end, then a lot of times that's intimidating and people don't, they're just like, that's not going to be for me. I'm not going to do yeah. that. But if you start off with that low hanging fruit, those easy wins, and you use those, then they'll be more likely to say, hey, well, that worked.
Yeah.
So why not try something else, you know, and try that next thing and the next thing and the next thing until, you know, they get into a little bit more complex things. And I'm sure we'll get into some of that, those types of things are. For someone who maybe is just learning about Ayurveda and what it has to offer. It might sound obviously different from what they're used to. Something that they're used to is probably more along the lines of what I described earlier, where you go to the doctor and the doctor prescribes something and then you get this benefit or that benefit, but also maybe some side effects and whatever.
Yeah.
What are some, maybe misconceptions or some, maybe pushback from people who are not so sure about going down this route?
I think some misconceptions around Ayurveda is that it's going to recommend a certain kind of diet, like a vegetarian diet, and that it's going to be restrictive, it's going to take away your freedom, it's going to be hard to do, hard to maintain, hard to live a modern lifestyle while following these different practices, that it will take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. I think these are definitely some of the misconceptions that people have. So we always reassure people that, we'll meet you where you're at. We'll give you the most simple thing that will give you the greatest relief. And you can really still enjoy all the foods that you might enjoy once you understand how to best have it, right? So someone may really benefit from eating meat, but the way that you prepare it, according to Ayurveda, would make it a lot more friendly for your digestion. So in Ayurveda, it's not so much about prescribing a certain diet as it is about understanding how is a person's digestion of their food as reflected by their pattern of elimination, and then being able to recommend foods that the person can digest well. Because any food or substance can be a poison. Any food or substance can be a medicine. And it's actually based on your capacity to digest that and convert what you take in to fuel for your body that determines whether it's going to be of benefit or of harm.
Okay. Yeah. And when you're adding fuel to your body that your body doesn't need. Your body needs to do something with that fuel.
Right? Yeah.
It has to go someplace. And I think historically our bodies have been designed to retain as much of that fuel as possible, and hang on to that as opposed to let's get rid of it because we don't need it.
Yeah.
Like if you were to fill up your car with gas and you're putting that fuel in and you put too much in and it's just going to spill out and you're going to waste it all. It's going to spill all over the ground versus, our bodies don't do that. We don't get rid of it quite that same way. We hang on to it. And that's where, fat starts to build up and that type mm-hmm. of thing. And we don't obviously want that. Finding, like you said, finding a balance, right? You can enjoy the foods that you've always liked. Maybe some more in moderation than others, right? And like you said, in the way that you prepare them might be different too, right?
Exactly. Balance is the key to health. So balance and moderation in all things will infinitely bless us on our wellness journey. And that's really what Ayurveda is teaching us. That's one of the key principles, actually.
Now, when you're talking about incorporating some of these practices into your daily routines. I mean, we talked a little bit about food and how that can serve as medicine. Mm-hmm. It also could be toxic, depending on the food is and how much mm-hmm. of it you're taking in. How does this help out with dealing with things like stress, anxiety, other mental health type challenges, or is this primarily a physical health related concept?
It definitely helps with mental health, stress, and anxiety for sure. Yeah, because we believe in the holistic healing traditions that the mind and body are one entity. They're so deeply interrelated that whatever we do at the level of our body will affect our mind and vice versa. So whenever we're working on the level of the body, there's also great benefit to the mind as well. And there are certain foods actually that were recommended for mental peace and certain lifestyle practices that bring about greater calmness and acceptance and all of the spiritual characteristics that we're looking for. Ayurveda and yoga, actually, the deep traditional understanding of yoga, are very deep spiritual sciences, and they are working at the level of the body as a way to prepare the body to become a vessel for unfolding spiritual knowledge and really being able to connect with your soul power. So we really want the body and the mind to be in a great position to be able to sit and ultimately to be able to meditate, to be able to reflect, to be able to do the internal work that it takes to evolve yourself as a person. So it's all working together.
Now, are there any simple practices as far as the food, to identify the food that should either be modified or eliminated or added to a diet, or anything that you can do to kind of maybe get started on this? Or is this something that you would recommend having somebody guide you through, as opposed to go figure it out on your own kind of thing?
You know, the first practice that I write about in my book, The Ayurveda Way, is actually a great starting point for most people. This is simply shifting from having cold, raw food and drinks to incorporating more warm cooked food and warm beverages into your diet. This is generally a really good practice that will be a game changer for a lot of people's digestive health, because in Ayurveda, the sages who have been revealed the science, who are similar to the sages who have been revealed the science of yoga, have poetically envisioned the digestion as being like a fire. And whenever we put warm substances into a fire, it kindles that fire. When we put cold water, ice, and cold substances onto a fire, it tends to extinguish it. So just by making this one simple shift from cold and raw to warm and cooked, from salads on a menu to soups, for example, it makes a real world of a difference in how well a person can typically digest what they're eating.
That's interesting. That was not the answer I thought I would have that I would have expected. Is really it's almost like the temperature change could make a huge difference. With that, and that is interesting. And the way you described, I think, sort of makes sense. The visual of adding something warm to a flame versus adding ice or water or something like that douses that flame, and that's not what you want to do in this case, right? So so look at adding more warmer or hot type foods. What you mentioned yoga and how they're kind of sisters with yoga and Ayurveda is sort of like a sister, to each other.
Yeah.
I got to imagine that that they can complement each other as well. If they're incorporated together, is that mm-hmm. correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In Ayurveda, we incorporate yoga for sure, because yoga breathing exercises, yoga poses are very much about returning to nature, which is the whole theme of Ayurveda. So they become a really important part of the daily lifestyle that we're recommended to lead. And Ayurveda actually helps you to practice the kind of yoga movements and breathing exercises that are most aligned with the needs of each season that unfolds. So it can actually really ensure that your yoga practice is most optimized for each period of the year, which is pretty cool.
So as you go through the year, you're talking different, there's a different maybe recommendations that you might have in the summer versus the winter, for example. Okay.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit more? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit more about that and how things might differ and maybe why they are different throughout the year?
Yeah, sure. Sure. So I think for exercise as a whole, we have a whole map that is very much dependent on the relationship of the earth where you're located and the sun. So in seasons that are colder, like the winter season, and even going into the spring season, we have our internal digestive fire, which is working in an opposite fashion to the fire of the sun, right? So the sun is considered a fire, and we have the fire of our digestion. And when it's really cold outside, we don't have the sun's presence quite as much. And so our internal fire wants to bring us to homeostasis or balance by getting stronger. So at this time of the year, in the colder seasons of the year, our internal fire is stronger, which means that we can eat heavier, more nourishing foods, like even traditional Thanksgiving foods in the United States, and actually be nourished by that food, provided that we do more intensive exercise. So if a person wanted to run a marathon, for example, it would be great if they started to train at the beginning of the winter and then ate, you know, good food throughout the winter. And then the diet lightens up as the sun gets stronger into the spring. But the spring season is a really great time to actually run that marathon because you would have built up your strength over a period of time. And then the spring season is when we have more of the earth and water elements, which are heavier by nature, in nature, right? Like you see the dew outside and you see like the moisture coming and the growth happening in the trees and the flowers and the plants. And our body too experiences that moisture and it experiences that kind of natural strength in the environment. So that's a great time to do more intensive exercises. Conversely, as we get into the summer season and even into the fall seasons, it starts to reverse. When the sun gets more intense outside, the internal fire of digestion reduces a lot. So you wouldn't want to have a whole Thanksgiving meal in the middle of July. You would just kind of want to go light in that time. And we're recommended more liquid type of things and even some cooling potency things. So while most people will benefit from the warm temperature, when it's really warm outside, there's a way that we can incorporate cooling spices, which basically are good for your digestion, but they also cool your body down. And we are also recommended more relaxing forms of exercise. So the summer and fall is a perfect time to swim. It's a perfect time to do more of a yin yoga type of practice, more of calmer poses, more of, you know, relaxation in whatever way you can do that, so that you are conserving the energy that you have, since the fire is not so strong to eat so much. You know, if we're not nourishing the body properly, then too much of exercise can deplete the body. So there's right. that whole relationship.
Well, and it sort of seems like, for me anyways, kind of just what I would prefer having as far as a meal in the winter months. I want the heavier, you know, like a Thanksgiving dinner kind of meal or a stew or something like that. That's, you know, a little bit thicker, a little heartier. You know, I would much rather have that in the winter than in the summer when we were talking before we started recording. I'm in Arizona and we're dealing with heat and dryness, and it's just opposite from where you are in Florida. And you know, you have the heat but not the dryness. It's very wet there, but would not be interested in having, a real heavy meal in the middle of the summer. I would eat it if that was being offered, if that's what was being offered, but it wouldn't be as appetizing to me as something lighter, in the summer months. Because I never really thought of why, but I can't quite put my finger on it. It just doesn't feel right. I don't know why it the specifics of it, I can't describe it, but it just wouldn't feel right to me. But in the winter, when it's cooler, and I can see myself having a much heartier meal, something a little bit heavier, in the spring and the fall, you're in that transition phase between the two extremes, I think. And so going back to that, I totally get that. And in the in the winter and in the summer, the activities, even just look at the difference between, the winter and the summer Olympics, You have more water sports in the summer than you're going to have in the winter. They just don't exist really. Well, they are technically water. It's just frozen water, the ice skating and hockey and, the bobsledding and all the other things that go on in the winter months, those activities are going to be different as well. And so those things, to me, that does make sense, that there is some sort of connection there. And why is it that I feel that way? I don't know. Just do. And it just was, maybe that's just the way things have always been, and that's why I feel that way. But there could be something, more to it, in nature that, kind of draws you more towards one thing than another, depending on the time of year. So that's kind of interesting how you describe that.
Yeah. It really aligns with our inner wisdom, So Ayurveda is giving us an explanation for what we may intuitively already understand. And it's also, giving us more kind of reasons for why we do what we do. So I think it's really amazing to know kind of how nature is working with us to, give us a certain kind of feeling. And the more in touch we are with that, the easier it is to really understand the system, and to harmonize with it. And it gives us just so much in return.
Right. Well, and when you have that inner intuition, that this is kind of giving a little bit more feedback and a little description about why things are the way that they are, mm-hmm. which is great. But you think about the reason that you might want to have one thing versus another, and in the winter versus the summer, mm-hmm. or in activity, you might want to do one thing more than in the winter than you would in the summer. Like, I don't want to go mm-hmm. jump in a swimming pool in the middle of the winter. That just doesn't sound very appealing, but in the summer that might sound refreshing to some people, and that might be good. But it helps to define it and say this is why it is the way it is. But we look at our bodies, and our bodies will tell us when something is hurting or mm-hmm. when something's not right. Something is, in your words, something's out of balance. And it tells us that, but we don't always know why it is. My stomach hurts, or my side hurts, or my legs hurt, or my back, or my something hurts. There's something not right. Well, what is that something? And, if we can help figure out what those things are, and maybe define them, then we'll be one step closer to figuring out what that root cause is. And solving that root cause, to me anyways, is better than just masking those symptoms, which is your body, by the way, is telling you, hey, there is something wrong, and it's yelling out and screaming. That's why that thing hurts. Yeah. Or that's why that your stomach is upset or your head hurts or something. Your body is saying, hey, there is something wrong. And then you go and you take some medication that just kind of dulls that sense. And it doesn't mean that that thing went away. It's just, it's still wrong. You just can't hear it. It's like if someone's yelling at you from the other side of the room and you go put noise canceling headphones on, they're still yelling. They're still trying to tell you that there's something wrong, but you just can't hear them. And, you know, like it doesn't make sense. So, you know, but the way you're describing this is now we have, you know, a way to take a look into some of these things that might be bothering us and trying to find out what that underlying cause is and try to address that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of the principles of Ayurveda too, is that the body is naturally a self-healing entity. Given the right attention and care and knowledge, the body always wants to do what it can to heal itself. So when we learn this science, we're really able to tap into that healing ability that we naturally have. And even, you know, when we go to the farmer's market, for example, the farmer's market is always giving us Ayurvedic options because the farmer's market is producing what's seasonal and what is, you know, local to a region. So if you want to know what Ayurveda recommends you to eat, you can actually just go to your farmer's market and you'll get a pretty similar list as what's, you know, advised in the Ayurveda tradition, which is pretty cool.
And does geography play a part in that as well, as far as that goes?
It does. Definitely. There's definitely certain types of food that a person will be more acclimatized to, depending on even where they're from in the world, for example. Mm-hmm. So like my family originally comes from India. And even though I was born in Toledo, Ohio, my, you know, ability to have food that may be a little bit spicier would be maybe more than yours because you're not from that part of the right. world that's accustomed to these things, right? So we definitely do have something even based on our place of origin or our nationality, which mm-hmm. can be, you know, certain tendencies or sensitivities that are good to account for. So it is good to try to stick with what is suitable to you, you know, based on what you're used to and based on who you are. And then, you know, secondly, you can look to what's local and regional and growing, you know, around you and see how well you do with that and how well you digest that. But there is definitely this concept of unique suitability, which explains sure. why different people can handle different foods differently than others.
Well, and to that point, so a few years ago, mm-hmm. I had some issues, issues with my stomach, right? And mm-hmm. I was having the worst heartburn and just like anything I ate, it just was causing all sorts of trouble. And I couldn't handle even the lightest of light spices. Like it yeah. just wouldn't work with me. It was causing so much pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, I eventually figured out, you know, what the problem was. And once when I addressed it, and by the way, there no medication was required to address it. You know, to all of, you know, what you're talking about here was there was no, you know, prescription medications or even over the counter type medications. It was a change in diet. And once when I discovered that and I fixed that, I can eat spicy stuff. And I enjoy eating spicy stuff, but I wasn't able to handle that before. And I know we're not just talking about whether or not you can handle spicy foods. There's other things like that too, but there's so many things that could be wrong. And if you can tap into what your body is telling you, mm-hmm. There might be something that you can change as far as your diet and things like that, which will help address those problems. And then, you know, going forward, you know, and it may not be an overnight type thing, or you, eat this thing and all of a sudden you're going to feel like, you know, $1 million. But, it might be one of those things where it might take a little time, but once when you give it a chance to work, then you start to experience those benefits. And I think some of it just requires some patience too, right?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. You really intuitively understand this. It doesn't feel like it's the first time you're coming to encounter Ayurveda. I feel like you've got such nice, eloquent ways of describing it from the testimony of your personal laboratory of experience in life. And, you know, I had a similar thing actually that kind of relates to what you shared. I didn't have heartburn. I've never had heartburn, but I was living in New York City during the pandemic, writing a book, starting a program, working at a company part-time, had a lot of things going on. And I also could not handle any spices at that time. I could only have like the cooling spices, right? That are helpful for digestion, but they're cooling. They're not heating at all because I had zero tolerance for it because I feel like there's so much fire and heat within New York City, just the intensity of it, you know, and all the things that I had going on was bringing out a lot of heat within me. But then changing the location, right, like the environment, moving from New York to Florida, now I'm like, wow, I can totally enjoy spices like I never had them before because the environment here is so moist and it's so conducive to actually having a little more fire to be able to balance out what's inside with what's outside, you know, and not obviously being quite as stressed being here as I was over there. So being able to exercise even more and, you know, feel comfortable doing that. So it is interesting, you know, and so even what's recommended or advisable for us at a certain time is not always the same depending on where we're at, literally, and, you know, in terms of our life situation. So it is all about tuning in and being able to make adjustments according to what our body's wisdom is telling us.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's just listening to your body and
understanding
what is right for you and what's not right for you. And like you said, those things are going to change from you know, one time period to the next. And that's okay. You just kind of adjust to what works and what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as time goes on, if you're listening, your body will tell you if it's right or not. And you just take it from there. Mm-hmm. You don't want to ignore it. I used to have this all the time and it was great. Well, why can't you do it anymore? Right. You know, try to figure out what that is. Maybe you overdid it. Like you said earlier, you know, too much of anything is, it could be toxic too.
And, exactly.
You know, it's too much of a good thing is not great either. So,
yeah.
So for the listeners who want to find out more information about, about this type of practice and what it is that you have to offer, where can they go to find more information about Ayurveda and what you have to offer?
Yeah, sure. So my books would definitely be good resources, The Ayurveda Way and The Way of the Goddess, which are just available wherever books are sold. And then my websites are also good places to go. My organization website is theancientway.co. And then my personal website is Ananta, ananta.one, all spelled out. And you can learn more on both of these sites. I also post a lot on Instagram at ananta.one.
Excellent. And I'll have links to all of this in the show notes for the listeners to take a look at. And, you know, if they're interested in getting a copy of the book and finding out more and how they can incorporate these practices in their own life, they can check it out in the book or reach out through, you know, your websites or on social media and hopefully find out more information there. So again, thank you for taking the time to come on. For the listeners, check out the previous episode that we talked about becoming the hero of your journey. And, we had some other good advice in that episode as well. So check that one out with Ananta. And we'll thank you for taking the time to come on and sharing, you know, about all of this as well.
Thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful to connect with you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.